The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
3 days left. It's the final 3 days. Get it now.
We should do a little bit more of a cool.
Just relax.
Yeah.
Listen.
Because you get super.
Listen.
Let's try this again.
Listen.
Adam, do it
it's
real.
All monster trucks
Adam, do it real, real, cool. Real chill. Yeah.
Go ahead. Listen.
We're listening.
Listen.
Okay. They're listening. Fuck. Yeah.
We've perked up.
Maps Prime is done this Friday, you guys. This is it for the sale.
The sale is ending.
Price goes up.
Oh, my goodness.
You also won't be able to get a free t-shirt after that. So the free t-shirt.
That's the best part, I think.
The sale all ends this week. It ends Friday.
Friday, $77 instead of, it'll be going up to $97 after Friday. Listen, Maps Prime is the only Maps program designed, or actually the only program designed, period, to help you design what to do before your workout, to prime your body for your workout, make your current workout
specifically to you
more effective. Doesn't matter what your workout looks like, it can be prime
any,
it properly.
Any program, it does not have to be MAPS. It does not have to be MAPS. You can be doing any type of program. The idea behind this was that nobody had done this. Nobody had spent the time to help teach people what you should be doing before you go into any workout and then teach you how to individualize it for you specifically.
That's the best part. There's a compass in Prime that helps you read your body so that you can design your own priming sessions and your post-priming sessions. It's, dare I say, revolutionary.
Over 80 different videos. I guarantee that you'll have
it's
at least
crazy
10
enough.
To 20 movements you've never even seen before.
Yeah, a lot of cool stuff in there. It's on sale. You can find it at mindpumpmedia.com.
Watch this. I'm going to turn off Adam's mic.
Is that what? Yeah.
Does that make it better?
A little bit better? A little bit.
Let me turn off Justin's mic. How about that?
Yeah, we don't need their mics.
All right, we got them off. You know, it's all lonely in here. Yeah.
Welcome to a special edition of Mind Pump.
Yeah.
It's just Sal.
Only Sal.
Just Sal and Doug. Finally got rid of those two monkeys.
I know, they were just such a
pain. All right, let's give away some t-shirts.
Oh, we got t-shirts to give away.
Yeah, we got some winners.
Yeah, we got some winners.
How many reviews did we get?
16 reviews. It seems to be the standard these days.
That's, yeah, whatever. Hey, listen, if you want to leave a review, you got to go to your podcast icon. You got to search for Mind Pump, even if you're already subscribed. You got to search for Mind Pump. Then you click on the icon. Then you can go and leave a review. And if you leave a review and we like it, you'll get a free t-shirt.
Absolutely. And we're giving away five of them this
week. Five? All right. Who wins?
We got Jay Butters, Centaur for Life.
That's me.
Uweber 18, Jesse's Baby Daddy, and Great Game.
You guys all win. How do they get their shirts, Doug?
Yeah, send an email to iTunes@mindpumpmedia.com, your shirt size, your shipping address, and we'll get that right out to you.
Yeah, maybe I'll bring the other guys back on the show.
Maybe. Yeah. Or maybe not.
If you want to pump your body and expand your mind, there's only one place to go. Mind Pump. Mind Pump. With your hosts, Sal DiStefano, Adam Schaefer, and Justin Andrews.
You guys both watched Star Wars, yeah?
Yep.
Yes.
Good, huh?
Hell yeah.
Are we going to ruin it for everybody?
No.
Yeah, spoilers everywhere.
I just want to say it was good.
Yeah, it was good. It was great. It put you back in that theme, you know, the original.
It answers all the questions.
Yeah. It puts you in that mindset.
I find it really fascinating how crappy of a job they did on those what there was two, right? Two or was there three? Of the middle ones, right?
Stop it.
It's like
prequels?
Yeah.
They were on TV because you know how they run these marathons.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're gonna capitalize now on the
dude. So I was watching it with my son and it was the very first one again.
Annie.
and Misa so stupid.
Oh,
I was just like, what the fuck is this?
George Lucas,
you lost your mind.
Don't you wish that you were kind of behind the scenes on all that? And you wanted, like, I want to know,
like slap him
how that all went down. Like, how could you put that out there? Like, all the Star Wars. I feel like there's so many fanatics that all you had to do was like, let's put a board up real quick and let's ask all the fucking fanatics the do's and the don'ts on.
You know what?
That's where he went wrong. He went completely away you know, from the hardcores.
Yes, I think what he did was,
he tried to create a new following.
They just looked at Star Wars and they said,
he just wanted kids.
Yes.
Let's get the kids.
It's a cash cow. Let's get the kids. What they failed to understand is that what drives the fanaticism behind Star Wars is the hardcore fan.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody else is going to follow. You're going to get everybody else.
And because it's such a deep story.
That's what I was going to say. The depth of the show is what really drives people. I mean, when you see like things like that.
So that's so surface that you just get irritated as fuck. It's like the signs were there, though, dude. Like the Ewoks, for instance, those should have been Wookiees.
They are. They're little baby Wookiees.
No, they're little fucking like teddy bears. Like, beep, 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 beep. Like, you just pick them up and you throw them.
I want an Ewok.
Like, they're not doing any damage, dude.
How fucking, who cares
about
that?
Try to poke you with sticks.
I know, it's stupid. But they had they smashed some of the machinery with their logs. Remember the log trap they
did? Yeah, I watched that Mythbusters. Yeah, actually.
There was a Mythbusters
on
it?
They did a whole thing on Star Wars.
The whole thing on Star Wars?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, I watched that too.
I will say this, though. The design for some of the weaponry on Star Wars is just horrible.
Really?
Yeah, the fucking big walking mammoth looking things.
Oh, yeah.
It's so top heavy. It just doesn't work well. It can't shoot behind it.
I think they added that for drama.
If one of the leg breaks, the whole thing's fucked.
Well, let's be honest. That was
not very step smart. On you, though.
In the 80s, that was the shit, bro.
Yeah.
In the 80s, that was the business. Now
that was the military tech?
Yeah, bro. It's like in the 80s.
Dude, do you notice they didn't like maximize this whole hover technology? Like, what do we got? We got like one little like cruiser, you know, on Tatooine that like has hover.
Yeah.
You're not going to have hover stuff like everywhere.
You know why, though?
Eventually.
Think about it this way, though. If they were, because
that's on one of the other planets,
I would just want to float over everything.
Well, think about it this way. They have super advanced technology, right? This is, they could go light, you know, what is it, warp speed or light speed or whatever.
Yeah.
If they were like trying to be accurate with engineering for weaponry, the rebels would have no fucking choice. They'd have no chance.
Yeah, I know.
So they had to do it in a way to where rebels would have some kind of an opportunity.
Some sort of edge.
Yeah. Like they can't just have like fucking crazy drones zooming in.
Oh,
light
they got
speed,
teddy bears.
Blowing shit up. They had to do something to make it so that you had a chance.
Well, they have the force. At the end of the day, the force is all you really need.
The force trumps all.
Yeah. You don't, I mean, if
that's all they need.
Once you tap into the force, it doesn't really mean, it doesn't, the technology and all the cool shit. That's all gimmicky.
If you had the force.
You have Jesus, bro. It's fucking all. That's all you need.
You know what I hate? You know what's funny? So my anti, like, I'm like, I have this like strong strain in me that's like anti any kind of like, I don't know, like follow this, you know, like
that's
the force
that's
or faith.
That's because you need Jesus, bro.
Whatever.
Justin, so, I've been trying to tell you
part
this
of me,
since the very beginning.
Part of me when I'm watching, I'm like, fuck, like. How ridiculous this is, but it sounds so much like other shit that we hear all the time. You know what I mean? just believe
it's
in the
collection
force.
Of all of them.
It's like, bitch, we're gonna fucking die. I ain't gonna believe in some invisible
it's
shit.
It's a hero with a thousand faces.
Show me.
He basically just ripped off of everybody's religion.
That's why
and
it's
mysticism.
Great. That's why it's great. I think that you have to appreciate it because of that. I think it's really, really, really cool. You know, this reminds me of the topic that we got into with Connor over when we were visiting on it. Man, we got into some deep ass shit over there. Did you? Who's not caught up? Okay, Westworld. I'm like two or three episodes behind.
I haven't watched it. It's on HBO, right?
He doesn't even care.
You haven't watched it at all.
You know why? I don't have HBO. I don't have HBO.
Dude. Could we start a GoFundMe account for Sal? Sal, get Sal. Get Sal HBO.
I don't watch TV that much. And on top of it, I'm going to pay fucking, how much does HBO cost?
Listen.
It really doesn't matter because they bundle it.
Do you know that?
It with what?
Do you know that we're in the future now,
internet.
Right? Do you know that you can do cool things like this? Like, so in the past, I used to like...
Oh, I love it when you teach me cool things.
I'm going to teach you something cool.
All right, hold on.
And you're going to appreciate this.
Hold on. Let me gather my thoughts. All right, go ahead.
Okay, so in the past, we used to have you know, Comcast or DirecTV, and you had to pay this outrageous bill like I pay right now. But if you're somebody who, like, you're not a big TV watcher, but there are some, like, specific shows that, like, you really like, you can pay for streaming. So you can just get HBO streamed.
Mm-hmm.
So you can pay a monthly fee that's probably less than your cable bill right now.
I don't have cable.
Okay, well, whatever. Your whatever normal cell phone bill or whatever a normal, like, minimal bill that you pay every single month. Because I know DirecTV and Comcast nowadays,
dude, they have some great
if you
shows,
do all
man.
The sports or anything like I do, it's ridiculous.
I pay
like
for Netflix.
It's like a car loan every month.
I have Netflix. I have Amazon Prime. Don't you think after Westworld is over that they'll put it on Netflix?
Maybe.
Well, there you go. Why?
Not if it's HBO.
HBO. There's no Game of Thrones.
Oh, they compete, right? Yeah. Netflix and
they're kind of competing companies.
Can I tell you something? Here's why maybe I'm stupid, but here's one of the reasons why I won't pay HBO. I feel like they're an old fucking model and they're being hard headed about
it. No, that's
change your shit.
Okay, they
don't want to pay fucking for one channel.
Okay, I don't know, man.
I disagree with
that. I'd rather pay for an
episode. Netflix is copying what they're doing.
Thank
dude.
You, Justin.
Come on, man.
Netflix shows other shit.
Stop it. Do not debate stuff you don't know anything about. This is Netflix took
a standard for how to produce shows.
Yes, Netflix took a page out of HBO and took it to the next level. Now that they've evolved, it's pushing HBO to evolve. That's what the beauty. Exactly. You talk about free market.
They're straight up competitors.
There are two companies that you have to love to watch. Like it's like Apple and Google.
Well,
going
that's why
back
I'm asking.
They
want to have the best show, so it like drives everybody to just buy their network.
As a consumer, we are totally benefiting right now because we're getting to watch HBO and Netflix
compete
for some of the best actors out there and the best scripts that are out there. So your best TV right now is...
But let me ask you this. Can you on HBO, is it like Netflix where I can scroll through and watch other shows, other movies... Can I, or is it, or no?
Yeah, yes.
All there.
But that's just like Netflix.
It's fucking beta.
Netflix
it's
is
Betamax.
All.
Betamax. Well, they haven't. Yeah, they haven't.
Netflix is the same. Netflix
is the
same
thing. I can watch
shows.
I can watch all kinds of series, like, you know, series that are on NBC that then were recorded. Like, I could watch Walking Dead. I could watch, you know, my kids can watch cartoons and Disney movies and shit like that. Can you do that on HBO?
They have
their own cartoons.
Their own
family thing. Yeah,
their own.
Yeah,
yeah. But Netflix is doing the same concept too. Don't think for a minute that's not what they're trying to.
Netflix is trying to make their own.
Yes,
and then they're doing a good job. Just now,
which is fine. But they have the other stuff too, like model.
I see your point with that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a silly point because what they're doing is they're buying these. They're buying them up after they're old, right? So they're getting all these shows after they've already been on NBC and whatever for. Guys like you that are so far behind, and then you get it. So that's great, but really that's just to draw traffic to Netflix. Netflix is trying to build their own community, just like Apple, just like Google, just like Facebook.
It is Apple versus Google. Netflix is Google.
Because
they're just aggregating everybody else's.
Here's what's gonna happen. I'm gonna go to HBO and I'm gonna pay for the fucking show I want to watch. I'm not gonna have to pay for a channel to get all their stupid shows when all I want to do is watch Westworld.
Hmm.
I'm gonna be able to click and say I want to watch Westworld for $1. Thank you.
I believe that's the future of HBO. Yeah.
Until that happens, HBO can suck it.
I believe. And they, to be honest,
you're losing because it's a fucking great show.
Hey, don't I sound like an old fucking man? Like
you
I'm not
do.
Getting that.
You do.
I'm not getting that cell phone.
Totally. Like,
I got a phone in my house.
You're so resistant.
I'll just write you a letter. Like, what happened to those days?
All right, Captain Grouchy Pants.
Yeah. Get off my lawn, HBO.
Slow down. It's 50 miles an hour.
Oh, my God.
I
actually enjoy watching these companies do this. I think it's just created awesome television. And I think I watch way less TV, but I get more quality TV. Is there a way to steal it?
Yeah.
Probably.
Remember back in the day when we used to be able to steal cable? Get that box and you can get all the
channels.
Well,
now you have the Amazon Fire Stick.
One of my friends still does.
Right? Don't you have the Amazon Fire Stick?
I've got a Fire Stick, but not the Amazon one.
No, there's a Amazon Fire Stick that everybody talks about where you can hack a bunch of shit.
Yeah, let's get you a cream.
Maybe you can do that. I don't know. You know, I'm sure somebody on our forum who's far smarter than I am can post that, please.
Help
Sal out.
Only every person on the forum.
Stupid, dude.
Hey, I will say this, dude.
Wow.
I want to say something. Thank you, Adam, for helping me move yesterday.
You just gave me a shit sandwich, you piece of shit.
Here comes the shit coming my way.
No, it's not.
Don't give me a shit sandwich like that. Don't insult me and then sandwich it with thinking. I'm going to get sentimental.
Adam's been there now.
I wanted to be there.
I don't want you guys to be jealous because you guys are there for me in different ways. But Adam has been there for me now a couple times now with this whole process. But I had to move yesterday. Had to move all my shit basically in one day. And by the way, I will say this about moving. It is a very effective fucking workout. Jesus Christ, man. I woke up this morning like, I don't remember deadlifting all day.
It's like all isometrics, you know.
Dude, holding like I had to load shit up. First of all, me and Adam moved everything within an hour. It was an hour, right?
It was pretty quick, yeah.
Yeah, we did that hella fast. And then I had to go in there and tie it with, you're going to love this. I had to tie it all down so it didn't move and shift everywhere in the U-Haul while I'm driving. So I had to get in there like, what was that movie with Catherine Zeta-Jones where she's breaking into the bank and the fucking lasers are going through? Was me. Way less sexy, though.
Yeah.
And I had to get in there.
I don't want to imagine that.
And I bought this like twine, right? And I'm so not good with my hands. So all I do is I go in there. You'll love this shit.
Yes.
My girlfriend took a picture of it. I go in there. I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to tie this to this, and then I'm going to tie this to that. So that's the... By the time I was done, it looked like
a web.
Spider-Man went in there and just fucking... It looked like he came.
That's what I get.
Spider webs all over my shit. It was all crazy looking.
That's what I get for leaving you, right? I should have stayed.
But nothing
I should have stayed for the tie down part, because I get in there and it reminded me when I got there watching Sal load the U-Haul up was like watching that scene in Zoolander where he gets the computer and he's like, like slapping the computer to get on. Was like watching him try and load the U-Haul. I'm like, what are we doing here, dude? Like, no, let's move this over here, let's do that. He just like puts it all in and it's like, we'll just tie this shit down. Like,
didn't you ever play fucking Tetris as a kid? Like, what's wrong with you?
I never played Tetris.
Oh, you didn't, huh?
No, I played a little bit, but it makes really so much sense.
This is what happens when you come from a good home and you don't have to move like 15 times. When you come from a good home and then you've been in the same house, you've never had to use a U-Haul.
I've never moved.
Or you're not the grunt that your parents just throw you out to all their friends as like the laborer.
Yeah.
You know, like, fuck.
Hey, it didn't move.
That's my weekend.
It didn't move. The string held tight. I drove 1 mile an hour the whole way, but whatever. It was good. But I woke up this morning all stiff and shit, man. That's a fucking workout, let me tell you.
Your moving is... Sal didn't realize when he sent that text over for help for moving, I was like, absolutely I will. And my girl's like, oh, it's sunny. I'm like, honey, when you move somebody, moving somebody and picking them up for the airport are two things they're forever indebted to you for life. Like,
it's actually true.
Sal thought I was looking out for him. I'm like, no, this is, I'm putting some money in the
that
bank.
That stuff's
right now.
Coming back.
Yeah. I'm like, one day I'm going to have some shit.
See, I know that.
I don't want to do it, dude. I'm going to call Sal up and he's like, motherfucker, I forgot he helped me and he picked me up from the airport. Fuck, I got
to
go.
He's like, I need to get those pills to clear this thing up.
That was an investment, bro. That was
it. Damn.
No sexual favors.
Fine.
Shit.
Where is it? Here she comes.
Queen Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Chimera Quaw.
Today's Quaw is being brought to you by Chimera Coffee. It's the only coffee that is infused with all natural nootropics for a cleaner, calmer, and more focused buzz without the crash. Click the Chimera link at mindpumpmedia.com and input the discount code MINDPUMP at checkout for 10% off.
It's the motherfucking Quaw.
The eagle has landed.
Quee-qua.
First up, Hayden R., what do you think of Mike Mentzer's Heavy Duty?
This is, isn't this...
Doug said duty.
Isn't this who influenced a lot of the maps, right? I mean, you were big into him when you were a young whippersnapper.
It influenced it in the opposite. So I don't know if you guys know. Do you guys know who Mike Mentzer was?
Yeah, I know.
Tall, blonde hair guy who was super buff.
He's a short, stocky, dark haired guy with a mustache,
so
actually.
We obviously don't know. I have not read this book. I do not know anything. Please inform me.
So, Mike Mentzer was a bodybuilder right around the golden era of bodybuilding, right around and a little bit beyond after it. So, like 70s, late 70s, and early 80s. He was one of the like premier bodybuilders of that era. He never won, like, he was never a Mr. Olympia, but he did win like Mr. Universe, I think, Mr. America.
Yeah, what was he known for? Because obviously the name rings a bell.
So if you look him up, actually, you guys should look him up on your phone so you can see what he looked like when he was training.
You mean he wasn't tall and blonde hair?
No, not at all. He's a big ass fucking mustache.
Arnold.
He was built like a fucking brick house. Like, he had this really interesting look to his body. Him and his brother Ray Mentzer were both bodybuilders. And Mike Mentzer was like the anti-Arnold. In fact, when Arnold made a comeback to the Mr. Olympia, because you guys know how Arnold won. How many Mr. Olympias did Arnold win? Seven? I think it was seven, right?
Oh, Mike Mentzer was working out with him in pumping iron.
No, you're thinking of Ed Corning. You're not thinking of, that's Ed Corning. Ed Corning looks kind of like Mike Mentzer if you don't know who they are. But no, he was not in Pumping Iron.
Oh, he wasn't even in Pumping Iron?
No. No, him and Arnold hated each other. So when Arnold won six Mr. Olympias and then took like a break, made a couple, I think he did a couple films, came back in 1980 and just decided, hey, I'm going to compete in the Olympia. Mike Mentzer was like the favorite. It was Mike and like Frank Zane. And
damn, he looks good, dude.
So he came. So Arnold came back. Arnold,
I like his look even more than Arnold.
And many people said Arnold was not anywhere near his best, but he won. It was like everybody said it was politics. Backstage, Mentzer and Arnold got into it, like into like a shouting match.
What?
Yeah, you never heard of this? It was a huge thing. No, yes,
I didn't get any of the drugs.
It was a huge thing. But what was beyond? What was behind that was A, there was a lot of politics involved, and a lot of people think that Arnold won that because he was so good for the sport that him and Weider, you know, best friends or whatever, and he was given the Olympia. Most people who watched that, who were there, thought Arnold should have got like fifth place. He was smaller than he was at his last Olympia.
Well, okay, Mentzer is how tall though? Because he does look right here when I'm looking at just Mentzer by himself.
Yeah, but you got to look at Arnold 1980. He was a lot smaller, not as sharp. Yeah, and there's a debate back and forth, right? Arnold was so charismatic, great presentation. Anyway. Long story short, there's that, and there's the fact that their training was so fucking opposite. It was so opposite. Arnold's training was super high volume and high frequency. Arnold hit every body part 2 or 3 days a week, but he also did 20-plus sets per body part. He did a double split routine where he'd train in the morning and he'd come back at night, and this was how he built his Olympia body. Mentzer was the one that, he learned his training through Arthur Jones. Arthur Jones is the inventor of Nautilus equipment. Arthur Jones came up with a theory on training to where all you needed to do was do one super intense max out to failure set and then let your body recover and it would grow. His theory was if you went to failure and sent this signal to build muscle, that all you had to do was send it once and anything beyond that would be overkill and then just rest. So here comes Mentzer, whose training is complete opposite. Mentzer would hit his body parts once a week, would do one set or two sets per body part total, go to absolute failure and beyond. He was an intensity freak. So his workouts were insane intensity. He used a lot of machines, used a lot of Nautilus machines, and he built an incredible physique. So his routine was opposite, right? He was in the gym for 30 minutes, and he was in the gym maybe 4 days a week. Arnold's in there fucking 6 days a week working out for 2-plus hours a day, if not more. And so it was like this big debate. And Mentzer would openly talk shit about the high-volume style worth of training. So when I was a kid, the original way I started working out was I started lifting weights like they said in the Flex magazine, muscle and fitness, body part split, lots of volume. Then I did the Arnold approach with shit tons of volume. Then I was introduced to Mike Mentzer's Heavy Duty, which is a book he wrote. Now, in Heavy Duty, you train the whole body 2 or 3 days a week max, and you did literally one set, one working set per body part, absolute fucking failure, maybe a little beyond failure, so super intense, and then you left the body alone. So here I am training super high volume, Arnold style, switch to Mike Mentzer's Heavy Duty, and within a matter of a month or 2 months, I gained like 4 pounds of muscle and got hella stronger. So I was sold. Like, this is the fucking way to work out.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm a kid and I don't realize it was just so different. Yeah, it was so different that.
Of course.
So I stuck to Heavy Duty and, within a matter of 2 months, my body stopped responding completely altogether. But because it had worked so well at that time, it kind of stuck in my head. And it was always something I would go back to. Of course, as a trainer, when I became a personal trainer, you try to apply that mentality to clients and you fail horribly.
Oh, yeah.
And later on, I realized that going to failure was too much intensity and that frequency was more important for long-term gains and that you could manipulate intensity. Intensity was a tool to be utilized. So it had an influence in MAPS in the sense that it made me understand how the body really adapted and that there were different tools that you can manipulate and use to maximize the body's adaptation system. But heavy duty style training is very, very short term. Like if you tried doing it that way, you would succeed for a very short period of time. Your body would stop responding. And they've done studies on this and they demonstrate that as well. In fact, Mentzer got to the point where his answer to everything was more recovery. So when he would have clients doing heavy duty where they would hit their body parts once a week for one or two sets to absolute, you know, super intense failure, and then when they'd stop responding, his answer was, well, now you wait 10 days between hitting body parts.
Oh,
or now you wait 14 days between hitting body parts. He was having some clients wait 3 weeks before hitting body parts because his answer...
Wow, really?
Yeah, because he thought the reason why they stopped adapting was they just needed more recovery time.
Recovery.
Because he didn't understand that the signal for adaptation could be different than the signal for recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're not getting stronger every workout, it just means you need more rest, which obviously we can see the flaw in that, right?
Yep.
So that's what I think of heavy duty. Heavy duty is one... It's just one absolutist type training. It heavily influenced lots of... You know, pro bodybuilders, Dorian Yates was very heavily influenced by heavy duty. He created his own type of training called Blood and Guts, which is very similar. It was very different than the high volume approach, but very flawed, like the high volume approach.
Just seems like all these things, they're so divisive. They find one thing that strikes a chord. They become this entire camp that we're just about this style of training. And you see that how each one of these tribes have formed. This is definitely its own very specific form of training.
This is why I get annoyed too when people try and compare MAPS to somebody else's dogma, because I'm just like, no. Like, you can't compare our program, and I say that in like air quotes, right? Because it's there's more to it. Like, that's why we phase each one of the programs. That's why we tell everybody that you should go through all the programs, because there's not one that's like for you. Like, if you're somebody who has like gone through one of the MAPS and that's all you've done and you just keep repeating the same MAPS over and over, like, don't get caught in that. That's to me, that's no different than somebody who goes through Mike Mincer's heavy duty program, sees great results, and then that's all they do is Mike Mincer's heavy duty. Like, there's a purpose behind all the different MAPS, and there's benefits and carryover to all of them, and there's an element to all of them that everybody should include into their routines.
Here's how I view MAPS. I view MAPS as, this is, first of all, when we put in programmed out workouts, that's how we program out the workouts. That's our suggestion. That's our best suggestion. Ideally, what you should do is go through the MAPS programs 2-3 cycles and then start to learn your body and understand the concepts in MAPS.
There you go.
That are universal. The concepts in MAPS are universal. The concept of frequency, the concepts of phasing your workouts for different forms of adaptation, the concepts of trigger sessions and mobility sessions and focus sessions, understanding those kinds of things and then taking those universal concepts and starting to, and then you can take that and become more intuitive with your training. Now, don't get me wrong. It takes a long time for someone to get there. You know, if you did our like RGB bundle, which is 9 months of exercise programming, even at the end of 9 months, you're not ready to go into that intuitive style of training. It might take you a couple years, but the goal is to get to that point, but get these concepts, understand them, and begin to apply them to your body, be able to understand how to start to program your own workouts. Because at the end of the day, the variances between individuals are so dramatic, can be so dramatic. It can be crazy. It can be quite ridiculous between one person and the next. And that's the one main thing that I think we learned training as many people as we've trained, is that it could be pretty dramatic from one person to the other. Look, there's probably someone that responds fucking great to heavy duty style training, but most people won't all the time. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So you got to understand that and get those universal concepts, understood, and then start to move towards that intuitive style of training is kind of the goal. But when it comes to Mike Mincer's heavy duty, it's very different from the body part split, very different from the high volume training of the day, which was the 70s and 80s. Mike Mincer, definitely one of the most influential bodybuilders when it comes to training methodology. One of my favorite guys to read. But aside from that, I would say, experiment with it, but don't get stuck in it.
Hey, Mind Pump listeners. This is Doug Agee, producer of Mind Pump. Just want to let you know that right after Christmas, the forum price is going up to $77. It's $67 right now for lifetime access. And we're going to be adding in some very special bonuses coming into the new year. Twice a month, the Mind Pump boys are going to be live on the forum doing at least 1 hour of Q&A. So if you love these Q&A sessions, why not get onto the forum, ask your questions live, and they will answer them in real time. All right, if you're not part of the forum, you'll want to get on there right away, because again, the price is going up right after Christmas. You can get it at mindpumpmedia.com. Shan 153. Why is it said that women respond better to frequency than men?
Do you know what this reminds me of right away when I hear this?
What?
It reminds me of the little tagline that you said in the first MAPS Anabolic program, the very first launch you did where you did the video that you and Doug did where you talk about MAPS Anabolic is like a low dose.
A low dose of anabolics.
Yeah, right? It's compared to like a low dose of anabolics, because that's what I think of when I get a question like this, when you're referring to women, how they respond to frequency, is because, you know, if you were to give, and these are obviously just total hypothetical numbers, but let's just say we gave like a small dose of steroids to both a male and a female, who would we see the most significant difference from? I think the answer would be from women.
By far.
Because they don't have that. And then to give them that, it's just like a percentage, right? So 50 milligrams of testosterone for a female versus 50 milligrams to a male.
A guy wouldn't even notice that.
Yeah, a guy, it would be very, very minimal. But a woman would be like, holy shit, like it's a major difference, because their body has never felt that much testosterone. So I think when you think of it like that, that's the real science behind the frequency when MAPS was created, that like that's how important frequency is when you talk about the muscle building signal that we talk about that you're constantly sending to the body. So for women, it's a significant difference, enough to where it's like, then that's why too, we probably have a huge base of women that are big, you know, MAPS users, is because they of all people are like, holy shit, when they use it, it's mind blowing for them.
Well, here's the thing. Like, so if we take a step back, first of all, it's correct. I'm going to correct this question here. Everybody responds well to, or most people respond really well to frequency of training when it comes to resistance training. Most people, men and women. Now, the reason why women respond better, and studies will show that they do, and what that means is men have a certain response, women just have a larger response. The reason for that is because men have, as Adam was talking about, we have naturally much higher levels of testosterone, which in and of itself is an anabolic signal to build muscle. It's the same reason why, you know, bodybuilders and people on anabolic steroids, they can do okay on a regular body part split where they hit, you know, each body part just once a week, because they always have this anabolic signal to build muscle. Meanwhile, if you're natural, that anabolic signal, which by the way, this has been proven in several studies, that build muscle signal stays elevated for, you know, anywhere between 24 to 72 hours. After that, it starts to drop considerably, even if you're still recovering. So you can still be sore. Your chest or your back can still be sore from your workout, but that anabolic build muscle signal starts to dampen, because recovery and adaptation can be two different things. They're not completely, it's not one thing. So just because I'm recovering doesn't mean I'm still building. If I have high levels of testosterone, I have an additional anabolic signal. So men have more testosterone.
That's an important point, because especially with women, like if you're thinking about recovery, just, you know, it's not that they're not recovering, because you can have workouts where you're more aerobic, or you're more endurance based, or but the ability for them to recover is, you know, like your men are just going to bounce back, because they're going to overcome that ability better with testosterone.
Well, see, I got to disagree with you, because some studies actually suggest that women may, in many cases, recover faster than when it comes from a muscle damage point of view from exercise.
Oh, I see.
Women,
they may recover faster, but men adapt quicker.
The muscle building adaptation signal is louder in men.
Explains, yeah.
Now, there are a couple studies, and it suggests, it's not like this, you know, it's
they
not,
do have kids.
It's not proven.
They do have a children, and then recover.
They have stronger immune systems than men do. You know, in many cases, they have stronger immune system than we do. But that's just suggested from some studies, but I think I can say comfortably, men and women probably recover from relative, you know, intensities when it comes to, you know, exercise about the same. It's not the recovery that's the issue. It's that adaptation build muscle signal. And because men have higher levels of testosterone, when we lift weights, our adaptation signal is going to stay, it's going to get louder, and it's going to stay louder for longer periods of time than women. So we can get away with less frequency better than women can, but we all respond better to frequency. It's just that women see the biggest fucking boom. Like when I have men switch to MAPS training, they see huge gains. When I have women switch to MAPS training, my God, the gains are ridiculous in proportion. You know what I'm saying? Like I see women, we see women on the forum all the time that are like, my squat went from 100 pounds to 175 pounds. That's even if a guy, think about it this way, if a guy's squat goes from 300 to 375, he went up 75 pounds, just like the woman's did. But in proportion, 100 to 175 pounds, that's almost 100% increase. And that would be like the guy's squat going from 300 to freaking 500 something. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
We see that with women all the time with more frequency of training. It's just because they their anabolic signal is much more of it's dependent on the workout than it is on hormonal signal. That's all. So
yeah, because they naturally don't have. That's why I gave the analogy of the 50 milligrams. Obviously, they were total arbitrary numbers, but I mean the idea, the concept, right? To get that across that, you know, just working out in general is that signal and that increase of testosterone, that is such a dramatic percentage. Like if you go by a percentage for a female in comparison to a male, that's the reason why women feel that so much in comparison to guys. They're probably affecting them pretty close to equal, but it's such a dramatic difference for a female who doesn't have that much production running through her. So that's the main, which is also why too, you know, I mean, women could synthetically take testosterone and get just as big as men, as depending on how much they produce and or they push into their body.
Well, you know? I mean, you're literally, look, you give a woman testosterone, you're telling her body to become male. I mean, that's just a fact. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're a woman and you go to the doctor and you want a sex change, that's what they do. They give you testosterone. Men's bodies are hardwired to adapt in certain ways, and it's a little bit different than women. And our bodies are hardwired to build muscle with our adaptation.
So just introducing like estrogen wouldn't necessarily have the same effect like in reverse of that then with men.
A little bit of estrogen
hardwired.
Yeah, I mean, you give estrogen to a man and you're telling a man's body to become female. You know, we'll grow bitch tits or gynecomastia. It's just, you know, we're just, our bodies are a little bit different, but what you want to think about when you lift weights or work out, don't ever forget this one thing, because this will influence how you work out so much. It will influence your intensity. It will influence your workout programming, your approach. Think of your workout as all you're doing is you're going in there and you're sending a signal to your body to adapt. That's it. So if you're going, when you're going to work out, I'm sending this muscle building signal. I have to balance out how frequently I can send it with the amount of damage I'm creating with, you know, my sleep and nutrition. And your goal is to just really fine tune everything out. And frequency is just one of those things. And you can get crazy with frequency if you manipulate intensity. So, you know, if you're a man or a woman and you want to, you know, really build your butt, two or three pretty hard workouts during the week is excellent. But on those days in between, you can drop the intensity dramatically and continue sending that signal. And that's where the trigger session concept, for example, came from, and even the focus session concept. So frequency, one of those things, man. You manipulate those. If you're a woman, you'll see some really big gains from working with that.
Flex Wardle, how would you guys improve fitness education in academia?
We're trying.
Yeah.
I think that's
more apprenticeships.
Right? Yeah, dude.
Right?
Way more hands-on.
Hands-on stuff.
I think way more hands-on would make a big difference, because I can't tell you, I swear to God, man,
I just feel like it's a lot of theory. You know, like even going through the process of it, it all makes sense on paper, and it like, I don't know, you start to look at it from a real clinical setting, which... Then when you get into actually training people, there's just so many more variables environmental
so much.
to consider.
There's one that you have to take in consideration that I think is almost trumps it, and that's the mental side of what we do. Like,
right.
I mean, so much of my experience is of taking like all the science and information that has been given to us and then trying to apply to a client is realizing that, holy shit, like just because all my books tell me that I have to do this or this would be the most ideal for these clients, like that doesn't take into consideration like all the other things that I have to deal with that person, like the hormonal issues, the stress levels, the consistency, the motivation, the just their mentality altogether. And that's the part of training or getting people to their goals that it's a whole nother element that, you know, science doesn't talk that much about. And so I think that's the most challenging part. So I think, like you're saying, with the hands-on is got to be a must, is learning that. And I think just the only problem I have with academia is when they speak in certainties a lot, where it's like this plus this plus this, like it's a mathematical equation. And with human beings, it's just not that way. There's always huge individual variances, and there's so many other factors like we're talking about.
Well, like metrics too, like they're great to have. Like I love those as tools, but it's just not something you can always rely on. Like there are just like so many other influencers that affect all those numbers, and you can't just put somebody into a formula and expect to get that type of equation to equal what you expect.
No, I mean, I personally have, I've had lots of trainers work for me, and many of them had much, much higher educations than me. Some of them came in extremely educated, you know, master's degrees in, you know, exercise science or sports medicine or whatever, but had never trained a single person, never worked with anybody. Mm-hmm. And many times, I would like your guys' opinion on this. Many times they were the hardest trainers to get to become good trainers.
Absolutely. They get in their own way.
Oh, for sure.
Absolutely. I would rather have somebody, if I'm training somebody up, I would rather have a blank slate, man. I'd rather have somebody who's like coming to you to learn. And I know that sounds like, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but I don't want that because I can control them or I can influence them. But it's just because somebody who has been, who's gone through all academia. And I was just talking to Danny, our buddy that we had on the show. He's going through his master's right now? I don't know if he's going through his master's or he's getting his bachelor's right now in Kines. But he like sends me messages like, oh my God, you would die if you heard what my, you know, professor is teaching and stuff like that. Because he's continued his education outside of his formal education too. So, and I think that's so important is, you know, really, really easy. All it takes is like for you to get influenced by one professor, one doctor, one guru. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, because he enlightens you in a way that you've never been enlightened before, all of a sudden you fall into this dogma of this is the way, which is
it's dogma because it's all that information that they decided was the most credible at the time. But now to come back and influence with new study, new trains of thought, that takes a long time in academia. And, you know, that's something you always have to consider that, like, they're not going to quickly jump on the bandwagon of a new science that exists.
See,
that, is sound.
See, academia, I think, does an excellent job with information. Amazing job with disseminating new information, how the body works, and, this is what we do in this situation, this is what we do in that situation. They do a great job doing that. The problem is the application of all that information. So now you've got this great information at your disposal. You've learned all these great things, but you've never worked with anybody.
Yeah.
You've never been out in the field, with clients. And here's a big thing, and I think this is what you were kind of touching on, Adam, was they don't... You can have all the greatest information in the world. You could tell people to do all these great things for their diet and exercise. You know, these are your movements you need to do to correct, you know, your shoulder problem. This is what you need to do to work out. This is what you need to do with diet. But there's just a poor adherence problem.
Like, yes.
You could tell them all these great things. That doesn't mean they're going to fucking do it. A trainer is really good at what they do because they've worked with people and we understand how to get people to do these things. In fact, this is why modern medicine, this is why Western doctors don't recommend diets to people because they'll recommend them and the person will come back and the person didn't fucking do it.
Yeah.
They just don't do it. It's poor adherence. So I know as a trainer after working with thousands of people that if I want this person to eat better, it's a step-by-step process. And step one is drink more water. And then step two is, okay, let's start reducing some of this. Whereas someone's going to come in with all this information, all this education, they may just say, okay, cut all this out. This is how you're going to eat. This is what you, and the person's not going to fucking do it. Yeah. And you're going to get nowhere with that.
That's true.
And so I think the way I would improve academia is make that, eliminate some of their in-class setting, training where you're sitting down and memorizing shit. Mm-hmm. Eliminate some of that shit and spend a year in the field. Like, go spend a year following trainers or working with trainers, working with physical therapists.
And have, like really good notes and, like, you know, just take the whole process in as a class.
Learn how to work with people.
You can refer to it and see where you had issues and, you know, things that you need to highlight and improve. And that could be its own little curriculum.
Well, just imagine if you could ask, like, a trainer, you know, if that was, like you said, a year of your education of getting your degree was... you know, following around like these trainers that are, you know, 5-10 year veterans, right? That have 100+ clients they've had or are currently training, right? And you could ask them questions like, what's the most common reason why your client fails? What's the most common reason why your client gets to its goal, or what percentage of your people actually follow your program or stick to it? Like, these are all very, very important questions to ask when ultimately we're all searching for this answer to how do we better everybody? How do we get the healthiest we can and the fittest we can and look the way we want to look? Like, how do we accomplish this with people? And what are the real issues that trainers or people have with delivering this message? And I think of a lot of this, and I've given the analogy before with basketball. I'll give it with like a learning a language. I feel like academia sometimes could be like this. Okay, you walk in to learn Spanish and the instructor is just like speaking Spanish at fucking full speed, you know, just rattling off. And like, you're over here like
Arriba.
taking notes like crazy, trying to pick up everything they're saying. And it's like after a year of listening to this professor speak Spanish really fast, you being a smart student has picked this up and you're like, okay, I get it. Like I can understand this, the language. And then you go and then you try and teach it the same way that you were taught it, by rattling off all this information and sounding really smart. Well, unfortunately, that's not the best way for clients to receive this. Like, yeah. And I think as trainers, you learn to disseminate what are the big rocks? You know, what are the big rocks that really...
Yeah, you really have to get into your client's head. It amounts to that. It amounts to you being able to connect to somebody on a level that you can take all that good information and stuff that you learned in your textbooks, but you can apply it. You can apply it, you can digest it, you can filter it, and you can present it in a way that's easy for that person to understand. Otherwise, if they can't understand it and they can't apply it, like, what's the point?
And I'll give you an example of this. Like, let's take like HIIT cardio, for example. There's tons of great science and great information out there that show that HIIT cardio is an excellent way for you to burn fat, that it also helps sustain muscle. It actually can build muscle. It is the most efficient way for us to do cardio. So because that science is out there and it's true science and we have studies to show that, that doesn't necessarily mean that I just give my client this regimen that says do HIIT cardio all the time. There's so much more I need to teach that person before they just apply something.
And no one to apply it.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, even though the science is there to support how good HIIT cardio can be, that person is not ready for that bit of information yet. They're not ready to just apply that into their daily routine. There's so much more they need to learn. So to me, there's tons of that in science. That was just one example, but I think we could sit here and we could list off those types.
Here's something else I noticed too. When people would come in and want to be trainers and they had all like tons of formal education and like, okay, I want to be a personal trainer, and I'd watch them teach their clients basic exercise form, a lot of them were horrible. Oh, yeah. Very, very bad with exercise form because they didn't practice it.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They didn't apply it. Whereas if I had a trainer who just had a regular cert but has been a trainer for 2 years, and I see them teach a squat and they can pick up the intricacies of the squat and sit back here and, oh, it looks like you need to brace your core more. And I've had physical therapists work for me who understand correctional exercise and human movement better than, you know, 99% of the trainers out there. But then they would go do a squat or an overhead press. I'm like, that's not a good squat or overhead press. Like, you don't understand exercise and how to apply exercise. That's the other thing. Like,
I've seen that too. That trips me out.
It's weird, right?
Yeah, because they know so much on like a molecular level. But yet, when they go to actually produce movement, it's like a totally different
Actually, it's
language.
True. It's on a micro level. They don't get it on the macro level. Like, like, how do I teach this person how to do a proper chest press with dumbbells? What's a cable fly? A lot of them don't even understand all of the traditional strength training exercises. I don't see that in academia. I don't see them. That should be a segment, actually. That should definitely be a fucking segment.
Definitely.
Like, here I am. I'm learning sports medicine. This entire semester or this entire year, we're learning strength training exercises, perfect form, how to feel them, you know, how to correct form, like that kind of
shit. What to look for, range of motion.
Yeah, they don't
oh, not at all. Well, let's be honest too, like, you know, I'll never forget like the first time I heard like one of my, you know, masters, you know, trainers that just got us done with his master's program, then he's like hitting the ground running with his clients and listening to him communicate, and it's like walking over to do a chest fly. So we're going to do abduction of the humerus in the horizontal plane, and that's going to be flexion of your pectoralis major. Your antagonist muscles are your rhomboids, you know, and they start going in, and I'm like,
but what do I do with my body?
Yeah, exactly. And the client's looking at him like
awkward,
what the fuck? And then you watch him do the form, and their form's awful, and he's just like repeating the fucking mechanics, and I'm going like,
listen,
dude, tell your
very
person,
simple,
pull your fucking shoulders back, bro. If you got to walk over there and you got to squeeze them and do it or whatever, but like that, like they have this disconnect where you know, they've been flooded with all this information that they don't realize that they can't just turn around and regurgitate all this information that they've been downloading for the last 8 years in school to this person and think that they're going to be able to understand what the fuck you're saying or be able to connect those dots of what you're trying to explain. Like,
and then it'll get really frustrating for them too. So, you know, they're not going to be effective at their job when they're frustrated with the piece there in between. They can't even communicate to get across to their client. I mean, I see it all the time.
I'm gonna take one step further. You said you would challenge them by doing 1 year of like in field work.
Practical application.
How about another year? I'll put you on another year of fucking communication, because you want to know something? When you're trying to talk to somebody about something as emotional as their weight that they have been carrying around for the last 5 years, and you rub them the wrong way, you know how fast a wall goes up, and anything that you fucking say after that is just getting deflected, or they're not going to absorb any of that. So how about that? How about just learning how to communicate to the to a person who you know you're discussing something that they have emotional issues and stuff going on that's extremely deep-rooted?
Very true.
How can you just – you could have all the answers. And this is what I find wrong with even some doctors. You can be extremely brilliant.
Yeah.
But you can't communicate that to this person across from you. All you do is end up rubbing them the wrong way or detouring them.
Not
you
connecting.
Talk down to
yeah.
them.
You're just not connecting. You're dealing with an emotional issue with clinical logical presentation.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm sitting here in a clinical, logical situation where I'm like, okay, well, we need to reduce your calories.
Spock for everything.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Like, it's an emotional situation you're dealing with 90% of the time when you have a person who wants to hire you.
100%.
Our strength, Shelton. How important is the negative on a Romanian deadlift? I see people drop the weight.
So
this is a good question.
So here's what you want to understand about the negative portion of a repetition and the positive. You know, one is the eccentric and one is the concentric contraction. So putting a weight down is the negative and lifting the weight up is the positive.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at muscle fibers, and the prevailing theory as to how muscle fibers contract and shrink a muscle, you know, shorten it or lengthen it, it's the sliding filament theory is what they call it. But imagine, it's almost like Velcro. Imagine muscle fibers running alongside each other and hooking each other at their contact points. And when you squeeze, those hooks are the anchors that shrink the muscle. As you lower a weight, you have to unhook and hook those muscles, and many of those, unhook and hook some of those hooks, and many of those end up tearing off in the negative portion of the rep, which is why the negative portion of the rep creates more muscle damage than the positive. It also, however, is responsible for a lot of the muscle growth that you get with muscles. But it is a delicate balance. Like, it will give you more damage and more muscle growth, but if you go nuts with negatives, you'll overtrain in a hurry.
Well, I think it's a 3-to-1 or a 4-to-1 ratio on how much we can actually load on the eccentric versus concentric.
You can lower a lot more weight than you can lift.
Yeah.
And it is a contraction. It's still considered a muscle contraction.
This is also just to pause you right there, a side note, I always like to give people, like, because we're talking, we're diving into this. This is also why you see most protocols give a, you know, eccentric or a negative count of like 4-6 seconds in comparison to the concentric movement, which is normally, you know, 1-3 tops. So, you know, when you see protocols like that, that's the purpose, because we know that more damage is done that way. So therefore, more time under tension, then we can then turn around and get more muscle. So that's the science behind why you see that.
You'll get more muscle hypertrophy or growth if you incorporate the negatives.
Mm-hmm.
If you just incorporate positives, like Olympic lifters doing a lot of lifts,
right,
there's some benefit to that as well.
Power, yeah.
Well, not just power, but because you don't get as much muscle damage, you can really ramp up the frequency and intensity.
Uh-huh.
Like, I could sit there and do cleans and drop the weight a lot longer than if I tried to lower the weight slowly.
Right, that's true. We'll just drop the weight, especially when you're using all of your maximal energy and force for that first part. You want to you want to be able to sustain that.
Now, it's one of my theories as to why Olympic lifters don't typically build as much big muscle as like power lifters.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they're both strength athletes. Power lifters,
more dense.
Well, power lifters do lots of negatives, right? Lots of slow negatives with their lifts.
Hmm.
Whereas, Olympic lifters, really the squats, they do a lot of squat training.
Uh-huh.
So they get the negatives there. Even their negatives in squats, though, they go down pretty quick if you don't notice. Olympic lifter will kind of go down quickly in reverse.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But they still, if you look at Olympic lifters, typically most of their muscles in their legs, like these big-ass massive legs, they can generate tremendous amount of strength and power at low body weights. And I think it's because they don't do the negatives, and that's maybe why they're not as big.
I haven't really thought about that too much, but now it makes sense. You know, a lot of the differences between power lifters and Olympic lifters, and you totally see body characteristics like that are, you know, totally different.
I think that's a great point. And I think really for people to understand, like for the average person who's just trying to build muscle, look better, feel better, the health journey, both of them belong in your programming, which is why we have like a, you know, strength and a power phase in a MAPS program. And then you work more to a hypertrophy phase. So, you know, if I'm training a deadlift and I've like, and I, this is close to home right now for me, cause I'm actually training a much slower negative on my deadlifts right now. So I'm, you know, getting 8 to 10 reps and it's a lot more slow and controlled. I'm not going much heavier than about 315. And I'm focusing on the eccentric. And the main purpose for that is just because I haven't been. I had been focusing so much more on the power where I'm lifting 1 to 5 reps and I'm just ripping off the floor and then I'm allowing the weight to pretty much
drop
back down and I'll do it.
Now, are you noticing you're getting more sore now that you're slowing
down? Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm getting
more damage.
I'm getting more sore on 315 pounds that I'm eccentrically dropping for 4 seconds than what I was when I was ripping 550 for singles up. So there's definitely a difference in soreness, which, you know, here's the deal. When you're trying, we're searching for muscle adaptation, both of them are important pieces to overall building, sculpting a strong, fit body for me. So both you should incorporate. Now, if you're strictly a power or Olympic lifter, then I would tell you something different. But, you know, otherwise, if you're just the average person who's trying to build the most muscle you can, look good, feel good, be in control of your body, then both of them belong in your programming. Neither one of them should be neglected. Mm-hmm. I think that's the main takeaway with the Romanian deadlift. So, and when you see people just dropping the weight, typically they're going for PRs. So if I'm chasing after a number.
Oh my God, if you max out, like imagine trying to lower your max out deadlift real control. It's
bad news.
And that's why it just depends on what your goal at the time is. So if I'm like if I'm increasing my weights, which I will be doing this in the next few weeks. Right now I've been focusing on all the eccentric. Soon I'll transition over into lifting again, singles, doubles, and triples, and I'm just going to drop the weight because that'll be a new phase of my programming. I'm not really worried about the eccentric as much. I'm trying to increase power and explosiveness. And when you lower that weight with that high of weight, you got to think the risk increases. And if that's not the focus of my adaptation, then that's okay. I'm just focusing on my power when I transition back into eccentric. And that's
something else to consider too, is that some exercises lend themselves very well to not having a slow negative.
Yeah.
And some exercises don't lend themselves so well.
Oh, and a squat and a deadlift is
like
a perfect example.
You're not going to do don't do a curl without a slow negative. Like, it would be stupid. Like, if I just throw the weight up and let it drop, you know, and I do a curl. A hang clean. Obviously, I'm not going to have a negative on a hang clean. You want to be in a situation where you could drop the weight. That actually will make the exercise dangerous.
Oh, yeah, that'd be horrible. Yeah.
You know, deadlifts, you could go either way. Squats. You know, I don't like to see people drop in the hole real fast with a squat. I even cringe when I see Olympic lifters do it. Of course, those are high-level Olympic lifters. But if I ever see someone in the gym just drop in the hole,
my knees just scream thinking about that.
Yeah, I just think of the compressive pressure on the knee and how it separates the
Well, that's the knee joint. You have to get to a point where you train like that. Like for a long time, I didn't train like that. I can drop into the hole now and explode out of it, but you got to train to get there. You don't ever want to see somebody who's like a beginner client performing.
I don't think you drop down like Olympic. Have you ever seen Olympic lifters just squat?
Yeah, well, I mean,
it's like it almost looks like they bounce.
I think I'm in a little bit in the middle when I'm going for a heavy weight, you know. And that's only when I'm going, like I said, for a PR. When I'm going for a PR, it's all explosiveness, all connected. I'm trying to squeeze fire everything at one time. I'm looking for a single. I'm not trying to get 5 reps. When I'm training in the 5 to 10 rep range, it's very controlled. The negative is extremely slow. I'm working on mechanics, working on depth, working on control.
Would you guys say it's pretty safe to say that for the average, just average person, they should always have a controlled negative?
Absolutely.
Pretty much. I don't ever see for the average person them applying a quick negative or no negative, unless they're doing Olympic lifts, which again, the average person is not going to do an Olympic lift.
I agree. This is one of the
it helps train the movement better.
Yes. Work the mechanics.
Yeah, just that whole
gives you better
time under
control.
Tension. Yeah. Of even just being connected to that movement in every part of the incremental process of it. Like you're teaching the body on top of building muscle.
You also want to think of it from a functional standpoint, right?
Yeah, that's
like
what I mean.
In the real world, you don't just lift things, you put them down. and people hurt themselves both ways.
Most times you hurt yourself, it's something like super like quick and reactive.
There's that, but there's also like, what happened? I put the box down and I turned wrong. You know, they didn't even pick it up.
Well, that too,
they just put it down and turned wrong. You know what I'm saying? So both are important for the functionality.
And rarely ever are you going to carry something that is at your like 99% max load too. So when you think about it, like, it's, you know, if my max deadlift is
five, shouldn't be carrying.
Yeah, you know, like I'm going to be
saving a family.
I wouldn't go carry a refrigerator that weighs 550 pounds just because I could deadlift 550 pounds. I'd be like, okay, this is probably one of those things where I get a friend to help me out with this. You know,
so, a forklift or something.
Yeah, you know, you just don't do certain things like that. So I think for the most part, almost everybody should be training and focusing on the eccentric, unless you're really trying to get into competing or you really want to look at your PRs. And even then, I still think that that should be a later process in your whole journey. Is like, there's no real reason for you to drop to singles and doubles or triples unless you feel like you're really, it's just like we give the sport analogy. Like, there's no reason for you to be trying a 360 dunk if you still can barely dribble the ball and pass the ball. Like, it just, can you do it in the game? Is it fucking cool? Absolutely. All those things.
360 dunk.
Yeah. Those things are all awesome. But there's, if you're not at the point, ball control, if you cannot handle the ball with your eyes closed and dribble between your legs and do all these other steps to getting to the point where you're at an elite level of a player like that, the same thing I feel like is with lifting that kind of weight and doing it in a manner that you're almost, it's like you're control, it's almost like controlled chaos when you're explosively lifting like that and just letting the weight come back down. Like, you have to have some incredible proprioception to do that without hurting
yourself.
You're
asking for trouble.
Yep.
If you like Mind Pump, look,
because leave us. You do.
Damn, a little bit, Backstreet Boys there.
All right.
Leave us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes. If we like your review and we pick it, you might actually win a free Mind Pump t-shirt worn by Adam previously.
Totally happened.
So it smells all musky.
He shaved and everything.
You can also check us out on Instagram at Mind Pump Radio. You can find me at Mind Pump Sal. You can find Justin at Mind Pump Justin. Adam on Mind Pump Adam. And don't forget, Doug has an Instagram page too, at Mind Pump Doug.
Thank you for listening to Mind Pump. If your goal is to build and shape your body, dramatically improve your health and energy, and maximize your overall performance, check out our discounted RGB Super Bundle at mindpumpmedia.com. The RGB Super Bundle includes MAPS Anabolic, MAPS Performance, and MAPS Aesthetic, 9 months of phased expert exercise programming designed by Sal, Adam, and Justin to systematically transform the way your body looks, feels, and performs. With detailed workout blueprints and over 200 videos, the RGB Super Bundle is like having Sal, Adam, and Justin as your own personal trainers, but at a fraction of the price. The RGB Super Bundle has a full 30-day money-back guarantee, and you can get it now plus other valuable free resources at mindpumpmedia.com. If you enjoy this show, please share the love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review on iTunes and by introducing Mind Pump to your friends and family. We thank you for your support, and until next time, this is Mind Pump.